Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Melon Thomas Benedict, who, after suffering from a terminal illness in 1982, he died. And for an hour and a half, he was monitored showing no vital signs. And miraculously, he returned to his body with a complete remission of the disease. Now, what happened, Melon describes as a journey through the light and back. And this is what we are going to discuss today. So welcome to the program, Melon.
It's good to be on the airwaves with you, Mike.
Your experience is not unique, but on the other hand, it doesn't happen to too many people. And since I gather that you were probably not inclined to be religious in any way before that experience, when it happened, how did you cope with it?
Which part? I'll tell you one thing. I'm someone who didn't believe there was a God, wasn't even an atheist. I wouldn't even bother discussing it with you. At least atheists show some interest in the subject. But when I was standing before that light, my first words were, "Are you God?" Like, I guess any good atheist or non-believer would say, "Oh, you know, am I in trouble now?"
Right. I like the idea of that. Yes, I guess even if you have a total disbelief in life after death, when you actually find yourself on the other side, as it were, you've got to think of something pretty quickly to say. Now, you seem to have gone through the whole journey, which I've obviously read about, and took it all in your stride. It didn't seem to really faze you in any way. And you've got a very lucid memory of everything that happened. It's not everybody that goes right through the universe, the galaxies, and you name it, right back to the source. But what was the most enlightening thing that you encountered on that whole journey?
Well, having a near-death experience doesn't make life per se any better. It didn't give me any magic or anything. There are some people think I have some magical powers because I had this experience. And I've had, almost 25 plus years to digest it. I'm the only near-deather that's known about that can be tested to go back to the light at will and retrieve information that's useful. I'm not that much of a philosopher, but I did get the gift of invention, and I've been a prolific inventor ever since. And I've been tested in double-blind situations to be able to invent on command with subject areas I would not know anything about or could be prepped for. But I tell you, the most important thing for me, I believed that I believed from an early age that nature had gone wrong and created a malignant cancer on planet Earth called humanity. That's what I believed. And I believed, like so many others, that humans were going to destroy the planet, overgraze it, overpopulate it, and just take the whole planet down. And I believed it would happen in my lifetime. And I wasn't even religious. There are a number of important things that have affected my life. But the very first thing was that when I asked the light if I could ask, you know, questions, the light said, "Sure, there was no problem. You know, there was no rush implied on me whatsoever." And I had a lot of questions for the universe, a lot of questions. And this light that everyone talks about, of course, you know, I had my experience totally in the blind, so to speak. I had never heard the word near-death before till after my near-death experience. I never heard the word hospice till I ended up in one. And, you know, pretty clueless guy here. And certainly wasn't into metaphysics and all that kind of thing like people are today. And the near-death experience back then wasn't that big a deal. I didn't hear about it till several years after my near-death experience when PMH Atwater, Phyllis Atwater, the great researcher in the field, found me and introduced me to Dr. Ken Ring, the other great researcher in the field. And they began years of working with me and researching me. So my first question to the light was, I had no fear at all, and the light knows you intimately. It will answer your questions so that you will understand them in whatever dogma, whatever genre you come from. The light knows you intimately, and so when I said to the light, "Are you God?" The light said to me, "Who and what is not God?" And immediately I understood that if I wanted to tell you who and what God was, I would have to name every single thing in the universe, and that would take forever. So the light, that's how the light answered it for me. It would take forever to tell you that. The second thing was, I asked the light, I said, why create humanity? I mean, why bother? Humans are so doomed to dark and evil. And I tell you, the most beautiful thing happened. The light kind of turned into what you might call a mandala today, or one of those round cathedral stained glass window kind of looking things. Call it a mandala, call it a kaleidoscope, something like that.
Yes.
And it was alive. And I was breathed inside this mandala, which I call the mandala of human souls now. And it was as if I could look in every human soul, including my own, and I could see no darkness, no evil whatsoever. And that's because our core essence, what you might call our soul, can never be lost, can never be tainted. There's nothing we can do to mess it up. You can't lose it, and that part of you is untainable, and all else is personality and politics and all that other stuff that comes with you know, being in a body. But animals do it too. I mean, we're not any different, really. So when I saw that, it just cleared me. I mean, I fell in love with humanity because I learned on the other side that humans are the most graceful beings on this planet, for so many reasons, and that all of nature, every bit of nature loves us and is giving us everything that we need to accomplish what we were created for, and that is our manifest destiny of star-seeding other planets. Isn't that interesting? Because we can't stay here forever. Gaia knows that, and in fact, that's the word, you know, that's the concept I learned to look at the world and universe through, was the word Gaia, or as they say in England, Gaia. It was James Lovelock, the great scientist, came up with that Greek term for Earth goddess. And the whole system here, we're part of a living system that's so incredible and that we can't quite understand it all right now. And so we act like ignorant children many times. But you know, when the mother looks at us and the kid's fighting and spilling milk, it doesn't think they're all going to grow up to be murderers. This is we're doing what children do. And we are growing out of this very quickly now. You know, the interesting thing about human beings that I learned on the other side from the Gaia perspective is that we are the youngest species on this planet by far in evolution, but we have the oldest, most complex DNA. Our DNA embodies everything that this planet and evolution has ever been through. So if you're in a human body right now, you have taken the long walk from the beginning of time to be here. And our DNA shows that. There's no DNA like ours on this planet. And every time you're born again and gestated in your mother's belly, during that 9 months, if you can look it up on the internet, look at all the pictures and phases that you go through to be born. You start out as a single cell, and you go through the entire evolution of planet Earth every 9 months. And then you're born into this world, and then you carry that evolution a step further. And that makes all of us, every single one of us on this planet, of universal importance, whether you're the bum in the gutter or, say, Richard Branson on his billionaire island. All of this is of super importance, and maybe we'll get into some of that today.
I think that's wonderful that you can express it in that way. So would you say we're really the guardians of the Earth then?
We're the children of the Earth. I was shown many metaphors and in many religions, because I asked to see, you know, at one point I asked, I'd like to get with the plan now. What's the best religion on Earth? And the light said, I don't care. Historically, religions love me and leave me. They come and go. But what remains is our essence together here. And In that respect, I have a very, very spiritual life, although I'm not religious at all.
No. Well, let's be fair. If you have found all the answers within, you don't really need to go to anyone outside of you.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, when I was with the light, I was allowed to ask question after question. Finally, I ran out of questions. And so there was only one question after that that I hadn't even thought of, but, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I felt as if I'd ask every question I could possibly ask, and it had been answered to my understanding. But because that doesn't mean I know everything. That doesn't even mean I want to know everything. That doesn't even mean I'm interested in everything. What it does mean is that my basic questions of the universe and life were answered for me. Every single one of us carries a different set of questions for the universe and a different facet of it, and it all adds up to a super intelligence that we're a part of. And mm-hmm. So the other thing that I was told on the other side is, you know, you can get all the answers you want. Getting the answers isn't a problem. But humanity in its young state right now is much more interested in the questions than the answers. Have you noticed this?
Yeah.
So even if you could answer every question in the world, I don't know how much interest you would get in it, really.
Yeah. Well, when you come back to the Earth, how much would you remember?
You could remember it all. You haven't mm-hmm. forgot it anyway. It's in our being. It's in you know, our essence. Because every time you pass through the light, you are downloaded with the total sum of evolutionary experience to that moment. So every one of us that goes through that light, and we all do. Whether they want to admit it or not, or conscious or not, every time you pass through that light, you are evolved further. And it's not about intelligence, it's not about education, and it's not even about what you're going to do with it.
Right. Now, when you saw every soul at the core was so beautiful and of the light and love, would you say that your conclusion from that was that what we're acting out on the Earth is really a game of some kind?
Not at all. I don't. That's not what I learned. Everything's in real time. There's no preordained plan, period. We were given this universe to make of it what we will. And if there were a plan of any kind, this would be a preset, closed-loop universe. So there's plenty of free radical activity going on, there's plenty of accidents, and there's plenty of new things happening all the time. It's just that our form of wisdom right now on the planet is almost completely hindsight wisdom. The new wisdom coming in, the next wisdom is foresight. I mean, we've been around long enough now, and it's really starting to catch up to us. It's almost like you can't have any excuse now not to be conscious. I've often said, you know, dead or alive, drunk or sober, there's no excuse not to be conscious.
Right, yes. Now, one of the things that intrigued me a little bit about one of your first experiences was when, after you left your body, you were standing up, and you said there was a darkness around you, but it was more vivid than an ordinary experience, and it was so vivid that you could see every room in the house, the top of the house, around the house, and under the house. And I find that strange. I mean, how can you perceive all those different areas at once?
Well, because we're to use a metaphor, we're part of a hologram. You know, the universe and life is a hologram of many dimensions, and I could say it's sort of like being out of your body and getting to see the big picture all of a sudden. And your lens can go in front of you, behind you, inside you, outside you. All of this awareness is available to you at any time. You don't have to die to have these experiences. And in fact, in near-death research, many, many people who leave their bodies during surgery or whatever can tell you what was happening on top of the building, what was happening outside. So that's not that unusual. It was a big surprise to me, though, because it confused me. It thoroughly confused me. And the darkness around me was was that I had no real dogma at the time, and the darkness around me was my own fears and desires, my worldview, which had killed me, which was thinking the world is a cancer, and guess what? I developed brain cancer years later. Mm-hmm. And all of that was like eating me alive, and I had to go through this, what they now call a life review, and look at all this. And the amazing thing for me was that I thought there wasn't any real love in the world. I was very jaded. I thought no one could really love you or anyone, that it was all a charade. People, no one was capable of real love. And in my life review, I got to see that my biological parents didn't have the skills to love me. They had not been loved themselves. I didn't get any skills in love. And so I got to see, and it was really bittersweet and sad, I got to see how many people had tried to love me in some way or another, had tried to help me. I couldn't see it, and I couldn't receive it. That really got me.
Mm. Does that also mean that was the reason why you couldn't respond to it?
Yeah, I had. I couldn't even recognize it. I had never experienced what I thought was real love in my life up to that moment.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah. Now, at one stage, you said the revelations coming from the light seemed to go on and on, and mm-hmm. then you asked the light, does this mean that mankind will be saved? Tell us about your experience when they responded to that question.
Well, we haven't fallen from anywhere. That's an old concept, I think, make people afraid that they need one particular religion or another. We haven't fallen from grace. We are the grace on this planet, and the light in your heart is the saving grace of this planet. That light, that soul I was talking about, can't ever be tainted. And the DNA in your body is made up of every living thing on this planet. You know, part of our DNA resembles a banana, another part resembles a monkey, another part resembles this. We are, and of course, you know, of the 10 trillion cells or more that our body's made of, over 7 trillion of those are microbes from the beginning of time, you know, like spirulina. Mm-hmm. And they're still in us. We could not live without them. And it's just fascinating to look at everything from the natural perspective of spirit instead of the, quote, supernatural, where everything has to be hocus-pocus and, you know, doesn't have to make any sense at all. It's a miracle. But I think God's magic is physics, and the rest is hocus-pocus. But everything around us is magic once you get to see. You know, and how many experts all through history have said everything that we have today, from blood circulating in our body to airplanes, were completely impossible. You see what I'm saying? So this is an impossible universe. We're living in it and manifesting everything we were ever told was impossible and more.
Right. We're quite a wonderful species then, really.
Very, very interesting species, yes.
Yes. Now, having asked the question whether mankind would be saved, you said that we should remember and never forget that we save, redeem, and heal ourselves, and that we always have and always will, and that we were created with that power to do so from the beginning of the world. So whilst we may look to others for help or guidance, we can say to anybody who asks that question, you have everything you need within. Is that correct?
Absolutely. But the other amazing thing about looking at all of this from the Gaia perspective is something that I talk about a lot in my workshops called collective intelligence. Just one of us alone is not enough. It takes many, many, many of us to become the creation that we are today. And by the way, every human on Earth is the same human. We all came from the same place. I know there are people that think they're from other planets and all of that. That's fine. But from what I saw, every human on this planet is the same human. There's only one higher self for all of us. That's that light we all go to. And when we start looking at with compassion at people around us as actually being a part of your physical body, and by the way, so is the nature, so is biology, and so is ecology, a living part of our being. And we're a part of something much greater. It's not religion, and it's not those kind of things. It's something, it's a living universe that we're a part of.
So Mother Gaia is a conscious being. Did you ever get to converse with Mother Gaia on your travels?
Well, it's very easy. We are made of this, us, this kind of communications is very easy. It's it was explained to me how shamans can talk to plants and find out if they're medicine or poison. How there are people that can actually talk to rocks and get in. Everything is conscious. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
holy
fantastic.
Places, holy people, and there's a lot of holy moly around too.
Right. Yes. So, again, when you confronted the light, you said they knew all about you, everything past, present, and future. So would this again tie in with this concept that everything is in the now and everything is one?
Absolutely. It's a giant concept to try to understand at this point, but we're beginning to get a handle on it. This is a big concept to understand, and it's when I was having my experience and I thought I was flying through the universe for a while, I now understand, because I go to the light daily and continue to write about it. I understand now that I wasn't going anywhere, because every single one of us and every single point is the center of the universe from our point. It was my consciousness that was expanding to take in the big picture, to take it all in, you see.
Hmm.
So you don't actually have to go anywhere to go everywhere.
Right. You've answered a question that I was going to ask you, so that's fine.
Okay.
Now, there came a point in your journey where you found yourself in profound stillness beyond all silence, and you said you could see or perceive spirituality, and told us that the Godhead didn't care what religion we were, and that it was a blooming facet of the whole. And you wish that religions would realize it and let each other be. But you said it's not the end of religion, but we're talking about the same God. Now, I think that's the pertinent point there. It doesn't matter what our beliefs, if we are religious and with some particular group, we are, although we don't perhaps admit to it, all talking about the same God.
We are. It all comes from the same stream of consciousness. It's just that almost all the major religions have had went into their fundamentalism phase, and that's when certain people use religion for state religions. They use it to control people, and it's our way or no way, and if you're not with us, you're our enemy. You see how that starts working once things become they turn into fundamentalists. And I was told that fundamentalism is more dangerous than nuclear proliferation on this planet, and all the major religions say that their God is the only God, and all of them are out there killing people right now. It's all the major religions are in these combats, killing people over what? Over God? Over territory of the earth? Over the oil? It's very interesting, and I've often said we all need to give God an apology for making him look bad.
Indeed, yeah, you're absolutely right about that one. Now, you asked to see the rest of the universe, and you went beyond our solar system, and you said beyond all human illusion, and then you spoke about the stream of life. Can you add a few comments about that?
Yes, and I'd like everyone to understand that I've had three phases now in the 25-plus years of assimilating the information and going back to the light for clarification. The story most people have read on the Internet, and it's been cut and pasted so many hundreds and hundreds of times around the world, so sometimes I don't even recognize the version of the story. It's been so cut and pasted by people. What I'd like to say is that I have three versions, and my book that I'm working on, and we'll have to now self-publish because I don't want to even go to talk about publishers, but I consider that story the children's story. That's the children's story. I was a child then, and my book, that first part of it's called The Wonder Child. I was completely naive, thick as a brick, and I was like a child that got to see this movie and could tell you all about it. Didn't mean I understood everything, But I could tell you all about this movie I saw. And when you're with the light, and in life, actually, we're creatures of metaphor. We all have our metaphors that we use to describe ourselves, shamans dressed like animals. And, you know, we all have our metaphors. And so I was seeing things in my metaphor. So when I say the stream of life, I didn't actually mean a literal stream of life going through outer space. It was a stream of consciousness. And and believe me, it was wonderful, and I really enjoyed it, but I didn't fully understand till years later. So the first 7 years after my near-death experience was like a child assimilating. And the second 7 years I call the Thomas years, because Thomas is kind of a metaphor for the ultimate skeptic, of which I am a skeptic. But, you know, mm-hmm. a true skeptic is only interested in the truth. They're not interested in proving everybody wrong. You know, right. That's a different kind of person. And Thomas, mm-hmm. just as a metaphor, Thomas of was the one among the apostles who had to step up and touch the real thing, while everybody else was just in their, you know, being total believers in what they saw. I had to touch what I saw. And so my second 7 years was me testing everything I ever learned from the light. And I suggest people out there that channel or have sources or pray to God, test. Test your faith. Test your source. And that's what I did. I traveled the world, and when I would get information from the light, I've since become a full-time researcher, and I love it. And but the second 7 years was really me just testing everything and being my natural skeptic. I always was a skeptic. I'm still a natural skeptic. And the third phase of this experience, which is it's like my near-death experience never ended, actually. The third part, which I'm in now, is called the unimaginable meaning. I now understand my experience, and I can talk to you on almost any level you want to talk on, from the parables, the child stories, all the way down to the quantum physics of the same subject. So that's the phase I'm in now. So I'd like everybody to understand that I can. Sometimes it seems like I'm talking on three levels, and I am.
So, right.
But as the wonder child in that experience, it was wonderful. It was meaningful, and also, you know, I'm an artist and a poet that had a near-death experience. So that was a part of the experience. My natural being is being a poet and an artist. Now, I don't know what happens when an accountant has a near-death experience. Maybe it is all in the numbers. I don't know. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yes.
So you'll have a unique experience based on your dogma, your character, your essence. And mine was like a big, beautiful poem. It really was.
Mm. But it certainly sounded very wonderful, and I know from what you said that you probably find a total lack of words in our language to describe what you actually experienced. Now, mm-hmm. Yes, sorry, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I was just going to say the whole experience to me seemed like it took 1 second, but it's taken the rest of my life to tell you the story.
Well, of course, that is an amazing aspect of these experiences.
Right.
To you, it was no time, and yet it takes you ages to tell somebody else about it.
Yeah, to bring it down to earth, you know.
Yes. Now, something that intrigued me, a silly little thing in a way, but you spoke at one time at, traveling, I believe, at faster than light speed. And I thought to myself, how would you know? Was that something visually that gave you that impression, or was it just the fact that you knew?
It was both. In my questions with the light, I was told that the speed of light's pretty slow, actually. That we couldn't even explore our own galaxy at the speed of light. It would take forever. And even at the speed of light, and sound is a part of light also, part of the electromagnetic spectrum, even at the speed of light, if I were looking at you, I'm always seeing your old image. It's nanoseconds old, but it's not the real you. I'm seeing an image reflected from you, and you're hearing words I've said, but I'm already thinking new words. You see how the speed of light is? The speed of light doesn't get you into real time. Real time is instantaneous with no time lag whatsoever. And that is once you get that, then you can start getting information instantly, and you don't think about it. you get it, and then you think about it later. That's why when I work with think tanks and groups, the information, I don't color it, I don't judge it. The information comes through usually just instantly once I begin. And then we could take months to sort out the information. But the speed of light's too slow for almost anything. Now, I was told on the other side on one of my visits to look up a man named Baxter. And it turned out to be Cleve Baxter. Remember him, the man who discovered plants have feelings?
Well, I wouldn't have known his name, but I think I can remember the time you're referring to.
A very big splash in the 60s, you know, and many jokes and many comedians have made bits on it, and the whole books were written on Talk to Your Plants and all that. Well, that was discovered by Cleve Baxter, who is just turning 85 this year and lives in San Diego, and he has done the most elegant work. I was told by the light that Cleve Baxter is on the level, although he might not be recognized in his own life, on the level of Isaac Newton, Copernicus, and Einstein. He's at that level, what he's discovered. And what he discovered is something he calls primary perception. And his experiments with plants and humans, because he's also done plenty of experiments with humans, they can capture information with no lag time faster than the speed of light. And so he calls this primary perception, and his website, if people want to check it out, is primaryperception.com. But everything in the universe is in touch with everything else in real time, faster than the speed of light, no lag time. And we're just beginning to become aware of this. It's this astounding thing to become aware of, and that everything around you, from your plants to the bacteria in you, is conscious in ways that are very surprising.
Yes, it certainly is. It makes the mind boggle a little bit when we look at inanimate objects as we see them, like a piece of rock. And you've mentioned earlier that there are people that talk to rocks, which all sounds rather strange to our normal perception of things.
Yeah, but all the information is, you know the old metaphor of when you break a hologram, a glass one, that you can pick up all the shards and the entire pictures in every little shard. That's the way it is with our atoms. And that's why, let me turn that off. Oh, my gosh. and that's why, turn that off. And that's why it's actually possible to actually explore the universe and communicate with other beings like us in the future. Very, 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 the physics of it's very possible.
Right.
And so a rock is part of the hologram, and if you knew how to read that rock and look into it, like shamans do, crystals, anything like that, you can actually, from one grain of sand on the beach, you can know the whole universe.
Yeah, it all sounds quite amazing and almost unbelievable, doesn't it? But we will accept that and work on that one. Now,
okay.
Something else that intrigued me was that when you came back from your experiences, you started to love all of the things that we would on Earth view as negative, the things that challenge us and test us. And you said you love things such as toxic waste. Now, could you explain to people why you would like the things that we would rather see the back of?
Well, what's interesting is that some of the things we seem as problems, if you want to see toxic waste, the Earth, Gaia itself, historically from the beginning of the world to right now, generates most of the toxic waste on her own. I mean, look at a volcano, what comes out of a volcano. Look at all the undersea volcanoes. Look at, it's just astounding. Humanity has cleaned up its act dramatically, especially in the last 60 years or so, and we're going to continue to clean up our act really dramatically. But so we're a part of the Gaia, and we do what Gaia does in human forms. We clear land, make homes, and we do things. That's actually part of Gaia work. But the interesting thing is that, generally speaking, humans gather together to clean up things. They gather together to make things better, generally speaking. And this adds up dramatically. I was even shocked. I was shown the mushroom cloud of an atom bomb, as a holy archetype in the archetype field now. You know, you've heard of the archetypes, Carl Jung's work and whatever. But I tell you, just seeing that picture stops everybody in their tracks, don't they? Doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
Just seeing that picture unites us. It unites some people in fear and some in awesome respect. And that I don't care how miserable you think humans are, that we've only used two of them so far is pretty astounding for creatures like us that are just barely out of the jungle. You know, we're not that far out of the jungle at this point.
Indeed.
It's astounding how these things can become archetypes.
It's just as well, I think, that we've only used the two. Now, what did you mean in your writings when you said the Earth is in the process of domesticating itself?
It's true. The Earth in the future and is in process right now will no longer be a wild jungle. There'll be plenty of reserves, of course, for wilderness, but we are the gardeners of Earth, and it's like when a child is very young, they don't care about bathing or combing their hair. It's when you mature a little bit, you get a sense of self-awareness and awareness of the world around you that you change dramatically, and you take care of yourself. You comb your hair, you bathe, you brush your teeth, and the same thing with the planet. We will never overpopulate the Earth. In fact, what a lot of people don't realize is that the fertility rate on the whole planet peaked in 1975, and we're actually down. We're actually becoming zero population growth in so many countries around the world right now. So, what humans are doing, there's a need. Gaia, the Earth, has a need for us. We would not be here if there wasn't a need for us to be a part of this. And that part is very interesting. It's about collective intelligence again. The more eyes we have, the more ears we have, the more hearts we have, and really, the more brains we have, we are able to accomplish things that are pretty incredible. You know, and I know this may shock people out there, but I do a whole workshop on it. And the fact is that just as things are right this minute, things are 95% better than they've ever been, ever in the history for us. And we should start realizing that and taking care of what we've accomplished together. And I wouldn't want to go back 100 years. I wouldn't even want to go back 50 years in time to have what they had. The good news is that we're cleaning up our technologies rather quickly now. Third world countries are being allowed to build up, and they're getting the cleaner technologies than when we started with. And all this will be handled very well by humans, actually. But the important thing about this is that it's something to really start thinking about, why humans are really here. And that's what I was educated on. Gaia, the Earth Mother, the Earth, has created so many life forms, it's astounding. I mean, go back to the Cambrian era and all of those fossils and everything. It's just mind-boggling how many life forms the Earth has produced up to this point. But the human is what everything's been trying to get to, because there's every planet, every star has a lifespan. They don't live forever, do they?
Indeed, no.
And our star will die one day. The Earth won't be here forever. And the Gaia has put in us, and us human beings, the entire trust, and we're well equipped for it. And that is that at some point we're going to have to start colonizing other planet systems. We can't stay here forever. And believe me, in nonlinear time and space, that time is coming very quickly now in the blinking of an eye. The last 10,000 years on Earth have been a gift to us of stability on planet Earth. I don't know why people think everything's going crazy. It isn't. We're way overdue for an ice age right now. Way overdue. Do you know what would happen if we had an ice age right now, when the ice sheets stopped melting and you'd have ice sheets down to Texas before you knew it, about 20 years or so? New York City would be erased. The entire huge population of planet Earth would be pushed into small areas fighting for food. It would be horrible. So, oddly enough, how all this works together is that we've warmed up the planet just enough to hold off any more ice ages till we start leaving the planet. I mean, this is we're talking over the next 400 or 500 years, which in cosmic time, don't blink, you'll miss it. You know what I mean? It's as, it's right around the corner. And, you know, we have all of these space platforms out in space now identifying new planets. We have space platforms now that can tell you if there's life on those planets. And this is us beginning to do our manifest destiny. We are the star seeds of the first garden here. And at some point, as much as we love the Earth, as much as we love the sky, as much as we love the rivers, we will have to leave here. And Gaia is way ahead of us because Gaia doesn't operate on what we call intelligence. It's way beyond intelligence. There is a knowing in the system. And we're the only beings on this planet that will transcend biological limits. We will transcend survival. And that's the next biggest step humanity is going to make on this planet. It isn't spiritual awareness, because I was shown that humanity peaked spiritually about 2,500 years ago. That's when the, you know, the Oversoul is evolving. Godhead's evolving. It's just not set there waiting for us. It's evolving. And about 2,500 years ago, the Oversoul clicked into the next level, which we have access to now, and that's called universal knowledge, universal consciousness, universal intelligence. And so the concepts that came out at that time, you cannot improve for the rest of eternity. They're universal. They don't rust. They don't get old. Concepts like do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I mean, wow. Yes. Incredible. And that was 500 years before Jesus even. I mean, you know, proven record. Those kind of thoughts, that kind of consciousness started coming in where we changed God from being an animal and fearful and throwing thunderbolts at us to a God that was a father and loves us. That was a huge transformation in consciousness that is still with us. Now, from then on, you can build a building and paint it blue or green. You can put a star, a Jewish star on it. You can put a cross on it. You can put anything you want on it. But you can't do any better than we've already done. And we just need to start practicing this universal love and this do unto others as you would have them do unto you business. And otherwise, what's happened to a lot of religions, and I ask people to forgive me for saying this, some people, but it's that once religions and all the major ones have become fundamentalized, and it's like Jesus became the corporate logo of the Roman Catholic Church. That's all. Do you think all the, have you studied the history of the popes? Do you think they were doing God's work?
I have actually, through the research carried out by Tony Bushby. And it was excellent, yes.
Yeah, I mean, all the women that were burned, if you tried to translate the Bible, you were burned. If you tried to start public education, the church was against it, all the way up till around 1800. And so is this God's work? I think it's the work of a corporation. That's what corporations
do. Right now, Mellon, we're having such fun here, and the time is going so quickly. In just a few minutes, can you tell me what the shift in consciousness is going to do that you referred to? You spoke of it in terms of the population increase getting very close to the optimal range of energy, because I'd like a couple of minutes or so before I announce next week's guest to give you a chance to give your website address, tell us about your books, etc. So what about the shift in consciousness?
Well, it's a constant evolution, and it took this many of us to get to this point, because it's a collective thing that's going on. Just like the whole planet is a collective consciousness and effort. Everything works on this planet. Just check out James Lovelock's work. But what's fascinating is that we have now just about approached the optimum population density for humans on planet Earth. The population is actually going to maybe top out at around 9 billion, but that's going to drop off by 2060, because if you think about it, over every 10 seconds now, someone turns 65. And without comets hitting, without the Mayans, without plagues, the human population is now going to dip dramatically by 2060. The good news is that in this Industrial Revolution and what we've accomplished, we have set up all the systems that will free mankind with a much lower population on Earth, which is coming very quickly now. Study it. It's called demographics. It's astounding how fast this is coming on us, and how many of us, and I, you know, this is kind of a very sobering. I think we've all gotten high and giddy on higher consciousness. It may be time to sober up, because for those of us that's over 50, and I'm way over 50, where are we going to be in 2060? You know, most of us, we're going to be into our next incarnation. And so it's time to start thinking about leaving the world a better place than you found it, because you're coming back to it. It's time to make peace with your children, because more likely than not, they're going to be your parents. You ever think about that? in the reincarnation cycle? So think about that sometimes. And the other thing is, all of our past was non-industrial, and our future after a certain point here in the next 100 years or so is non-industrial. The future is not about working. The people of the future, and I got to see the mass potential of the future. There are no exact dates in the future at all. It's all it all slides a bit. The mass potential of where humanity is going is so incredible. What we call the people of the future look back on us living now, as the giants of all of history. Can you believe that? We think we're really messing up the world. And indeed, we're looked at as the giants of history who set everything free with our blood, sweat, and tears that we've invested in this great journey that we're on.
I can believe that if you look back and understand that everything is progressing and we are evolving, yes.
It really adds up, and it adds up faster and faster. It's just like with collective intelligence, you know, one brain, two brains, three brains. Suddenly it becomes exponential. Children are born now with more information at their fingertips than Einstein could even imagine, and they're born with it and given it. It's astounding.
Right. Helen, would you like to tell people at this stage about your website and whether upcoming new books, if they are in fact now published, or when they might be available?
My books are not out right now because I'm primarily an inventor. I've been a professional inventor ever since my near-death experience, mainly inventing health devices and things like that. So I spend most of my time inventing, and people can find out about my light inventions on a website called lighthealthresearch.com, lighthealthresearch.com. You can check out some of my inventions. My near-death website, which is different, is Mellon, M-E-L-L-E-N, mellonthomas.com. And the books will be out. You know, I love writing, and I just decided that I'm going to self-publish, but I'm right in the middle of a project for the last 2 years that I want to finish, because I never really imagined myself making a living doing book tours. It doesn't seem like a lot of fun. But my main gift was invention, and that's how I can help this world, is to be a source of answers and technologies. What I channel from the light is testable, patentable, buildable. It's not philosophy. It's real stuff that can help people. And health is number one ever. And so most of my inventions have involved in health and regeneration.
Right. Now, just to get back to something here, when you mentioned the website Light Help Research, was the second word help or health?
Help.
Help, okay, right.
Help.
I thought thought it was, but I thought I'd better clarify.
So light health research. Yeah.
Yeah, right, okay, I've got that.
I was educated on the other side at how important light and electrons are, and so I've spent the rest of my life exploring this, raising funding for research, and developing technologies in many aspects. My technologies are around the planet. Most people may not even know about it till now. It's only now that we're really bringing things out for the regular guys, you know, the consumers. So it's a new world for sure.
Are these inventions that you have, which are to do with people's wellness, is that something you use or you teach people about in your workshops?
It's something I use. I have been using many different devices I've invented over the years. I use it. My when I was finished asking the light all my questions, then the light reminded me that there was, I had one question left, and I said, "What do you mean?" The light said, "What was your first question?" And what the light meant by that was that all of us at a certain age ask our first serious question about the universe. It may be, "Why is the sky blue?" You know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
My first question, oddly enough, mainly because I was raised in Catholic boarding school and told I was going to go to hell for eternity, I think this is why I contemplated things. My first serious question was, "Why do we grow old and die?" And that's what the light reminded me. And then light downloaded so much information about that. I spent the rest of my life researching it and developing products based on that information.
Right, so I'm joking a little bit here, but were your inventions meant to perpetuate our lives?
Absolutely. You know, it's very, very possible to regenerate more than you're degenerating. I don't think anybody wants to live forever, if you understand what that would be, but... And how real and precious the natural reincarnation system is. It's much more than spiritual. But we can certainly extend life. We can heal you 200 times faster than normal without any side effects. NASA uses phototherapy in outer space because there's no healing in outer space. Period. The bruises, cuts, nothing heals, and astronauts lose bone the minute they go weightless. And so NASA's into this. It's phototherapy is in hospitals now. It's in spas, you know, photo facials to make your face look younger. We've taken it. I got into this field at the very beginning of it, you know, almost 30 years ago now, and have developed some very interesting products for getting you through life, not just photo facials. Yeah, we can make you look a lot better, but we want you to regenerate from the inside out.
Hmm. Very fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you do any newsletters or articles on your site?
I should, and I hope to do more of that. I really should. I've been inconsistent with that because I just research and pretty much, you know, I tell people I never got that famous disease. You know, that disease to be famous? I never got it. Well, I don't think I'm here to save the world or any kind of messiah. So, in fact, I retired for 10 years from 95 to 2005, did nothing about the near-death experience at all. The Internet hit because I'm in so many books. Suddenly, the whole thing took off without me. I didn't encourage it at all.
Well,
I was the last one to put up a website about me. Pardon me.
Melon, it's been great talking with you. I have to stop you here, regretfully. It's been extremely interesting, and I'm so pleased that you were able to step in and help me out when my last guest had to cancel that. I do appreciate that immensely. So thank you very, very much for coming onto the program.
And let's do it again sometime.
Thank you. I'd like to tell you, friends, that next week I have Shekina Rose, who uses her vocal transmissions for healing purposes, and she has been scientifically checked out, and they have verified that her vocals contained the whole lost scowl of the ancient secret solfeggio frequencies, which are in the miracle codes of love and transformation. So we have yet another very interesting guest coming along. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you very much.